I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Vincent Lam joins me now. He's got a new book out, his long-awaited novel, The Headmaster's Wager. It has already been described as epic, a masterpiece, superbly crafted and deeply affecting. In the book, Percival Chin is the headmaster of a highly regarded English school in Vietnam. Set amidst the Vietnam War, we see Chin, who's Chinese, navigate the culture and politics of Vietnam. He's a gambling and womanizing bon vivant, looking out for his son, who he wants to retain a sense of his Chinese identity, and Chin has also fallen for a local, half-Vietnamese, half-French woman. Vincent Lam is an emergency physician in Toronto, and he lectures at the University of Toronto. He received the 2006 Scotiabank Giller Prize for his collection, Bloodletting and Miraculous Cures. He's also written a biography of Tommy Douglas and co-written a book on influenza. The website for more is at vincentlam.ca. The book is published by Doubleday. He will be appearing with Lyndon McIntyre next Wednesday night, the 9th of May, at Insight, the series put on by the Vancouver International Writers Festival, which will be at the central branch of the Vancouver Public Library downtown. And next Thursday night, the 10th, he'll be appearing at Bolan Books in Victoria. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Vancouver this day, Vincent Lam. Dr. Lam, good morning.
It's great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Are you in town for the week?
Yes, yes. Well, I might make a brief stop. I will make a brief stop at Whistler.
Yeah. This tour, I guess it's just started for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Is that fun for you? Do you enjoy doing interviews like these, or going out meeting readers at bookstores, signing books and the sort?
Well, sure. I mean, I enjoy all the stuff that I'm here for. You know, I love talking about the book and communicating with readers and meeting readers. I sometimes wish that airport security wasn't quite so much of a drag, but I think that's just the reality of travel these days. But the stuff that I'm here to do is good. I like it.
Now, I read somewhere that this book, you have had this in your head for how long? 15, 20 years or so?
Well, you know, probably a little bit more than 20 years. I think when I realized that I wanted to be a writer, I was about 15 years old, and this is the book that I started to think about at that time, so a little bit over 20 years.
So when you are on a book tour like you are now, the book's finished, obviously. It's between covers. You want people to buy it. You want people to read it. Do you think about things like how could I have made it better, or has the writing process of that the book has that ended for you already?
Well, I mean, the writing process of the book was long, and the book and I, we had our difficulties at various points. You know, I think that we had our fair share of arguments, but there was no way that I was going to stop working on the book until I felt that it was absolutely as good and as complete and as true as I could make it. And so no, I have no second thoughts or, you know, should I have done this or should I have done that. This book is a book that feels the way I imagined it should feel and that contains the set of emotions which I hoped to portray. Going on the road with it is kind of like going on the road with a friend. You know, you have a friend that you want to introduce to people, and in this case, the friend that I'm introducing is my book.
So what happens when you read reviews, if you do, and they quibble with some part of it, saying that you should have done this or you should have done that better?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I have to tell you, when you read reviews, and I guess there's a few different kinds of negative commentary, because you're asking about negative commentary. And there are some things where you read it, you say, well, you know, I can imagine that someone would see it that way, and that's fine. And then there's other reviews that you read where you think, you know, I really think that that reviewer is writing about their own issues, frankly, and is not really writing about my book. And that's something that makes you feel a bit bad, because then you think, well, you know, I'm not really sure that this reflects the book. And so I'll be totally honest, when you read a review like that, you feel a bit sour about it, and then you go on because there's nothing else to do. And I think if you've gotten to the point where you feel that your relationship with a book as an author is intact and is whole and is honest, then that actually remains quite untouched. It's a weird thing. It's kind of like, you know, again, it's this friend thing where you've got a friend, right? when someone says some bad thing about your friend, it doesn't mean you believe them. You're still friends. You still like your friends.
And but the reviews generally for this book have been pretty good, haven't they?
Well, actually, I'm very, very lucky because the reviews have generally been incredibly positive.
Yeah. Now, I read somewhere that the character of Percival was inspired by your grandfather, William Lynn, to whom you dedicate the book. Is that, I mean, where do the similarities end, I guess?
Sure. Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. And it is inspired by my grandfather. And the basic setup of the character is quite true to my grandfather's setup. And then all the events that happen in the book are fictional. So what do I mean by the setup of the character? Well, both my grandfather and a character in this book, the protagonist, Percival Chen, are headmasters of English schools, prestigious and well-regarded English schools in Vietnam. And both are charming, smart, intelligent, accomplished, and able to earn a lot of money at this business of teaching English, and also able to lose a lot of money because both of them are problem gamblers, womanizers, men who drink only the best cognac, you know, guys who really like to enjoy the things they enjoy. And so, you know, they're both flawed characters, and that's kind of where the similarity ends, you know. So these circumstances of my grandfather and the character are the same, and then almost everything that happens in the book from that point forward is fiction.
How did your grandfather, how did he end up in Vietnam?
Well, my grandfather went to Vietnam as a teenager, and he was born in China, grew up in China, and at the time it was very common for people in certain provinces of China, especially in the south, to go abroad to seek their fortune. And certainly some people came to Canada, came to British Columbia to seek their fortunes. Some people went to Australia, some people went to California, and many young men went to different countries in Southeast Asia. And so that's what my grandfather did. There were relatives in Vietnam, and so he went to join them in Vietnam and to try to make a life for himself.
And your own parents, where were they born?
My parents were born in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they were born in this place called Cha Lon, which was very much this Chinese enclave within Vietnam. It was a commercial city, and it was kind of a sister city to Saigon. And it was possible to live a very Chinese life there, to the extent that people didn't necessarily even speak very good Vietnamese. And, of course, this caused certain tensions, certain problems. And some of that is what gets explored in this novel, The Headmaster's Wager.
Race is something that you also talk about in the book, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think from our vantage point in the West, right, we sometimes forget that there's something to us which looks very homogeneous. It's actually very heterogeneous in those places. So, you know, for instance, in Asia, there are lots of perceptions and lots of prejudices that that different groups of people have against each other, you know, even though they all look the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, that happens to be true in Western Europe as well. So this is not a unique human phenomenon, but I think that we in the West sometimes don't realize that and don't realize the extent to which that influences people's actions and history and politics and war when we're looking at a part of the world that we're not as familiar with. And so in this case, I mean, that was definitely a huge part of the dynamic in Vietnam and in Southeast Asia at the time.
What's Percival's relationship with his son like?
Well, I mean, you know, Percival is a man who deeply loves and deeply cares for his son. And he's also a man who believes that his son should act a certain way and should honor certain traditions. And specifically, he wants his son to remain culturally Chinese, although his son was born in Vietnam. So he's a loving father, but like many fathers, and again, this is true the world over, he thinks he knows best. And you know, like many fathers, and I think this is also true the world over, sometimes, you know, what the father thinks is best doesn't necessarily play out all that well when it gets applied to the real world.
So how old is the son in the book?
Well, at the opening of the book, the son is 16 years old.
Yeah, and then he gets sent to China soon after, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This idea of Percival wanting his son to retain his Chinese-ness, if you will, was that something that you felt growing up?
No, not at all. I mean, my parents had a very liberal Western education. So my father did his high school in Australia and then did his undergrad in Australia, did his master's degree at Simon Fraser. My mother was schooled in the French system in Vietnam, studied architecture at McGill. So my parents had a very, very liberal Western education. So it wasn't at all part of my childhood experience. But, you know, it is one of these things that I think is very interesting. And one of the reasons that it was especially interesting in Vietnam during the middle part of the 20th century is that the Chinese community in Vietnam remained quite distinctly Chinese in this sort of old-fashioned way. But actually, at that point in time, China was changing and undergoing tremendous upheaval. Mao had just managed to take control of the entire country. China was becoming communist. Everything was changing. Old traditions were being thrown out. New economic systems, new social systems were being put into place. And then, of course, in the 60s came the Cultural Revolution. And no one could possibly have foreseen what that would do to China. So one of the really interesting things is that in Vietnam, and I think it's probably true in other parts of Southeast Asia as well, you had these Chinese enclaves which were holding on to traditions and ways of living from what they perceived to be their homeland, meaning China, when those traditions and those ways of living didn't even exist in China anymore. And so that's one of the great ironies of those communities in that time.
In the course of writing this book, did you set out to learn something about yourself and your family?
No, not really. I mean,
but you obviously did, right? You learned something, haven't you?
Well, you always learn something when you write a book.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that there's this kind of blurring of people's understandings of different kinds of books in this era. You know, wherein people, for instance, have sometimes been known to write books which are fiction and publish them as memoir, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, readers and the public get very upset when they learn, and rightly so, I think they should get upset, but they get upset when they learn that, in fact, those books were not memoir and were, in fact, largely fiction. And then the flip side also happens in this sort of strange, misunderstood way, in that people often think that novels have to be based on reality, right? The novels are something that, of course, you know, this must have happened, otherwise, you know, how could someone have written about it? And I think that's kind of a, you know, bit of a distraction from the purpose of what different books should be. You know, I think memoir is meant to be someone's recollection of a certain point in time, and it's not good if people are making it up. Now, fiction, on the other hand, I think is something where most novelists are aiming at a certain kind of emotional truth, right? And that emotional truth usually has to do with the characters and the time and place. So in my case, the time and place is the Vietnam War in Vietnam and the years before and after in sort of the middle to late part of the 20th century. And, you know, I think what most novelists hope to do is use fiction, right, to use made-up events to try to understand a particular time and place and a particular set of people in an emotionally truthful way, right? But that world exists on its own, right? Like, of course, I have a lot of feelings about the time and the place because my family comes from that time and the place. But you know, I mean, you know, it is this sort of this sort of slightly erroneous assumption that people sometimes are tempted to make. You know, if one says, "Oh, well, you know, of course, it's an exploration of your family and so on and so forth," because I think that it's a little bit untrue to say that.
Now, the book has also been compared to Graham Greene. Did you read much of Greene growing up?
Well, I certainly read The Quiet American,
yeah.
And I can't say that I've read other work by Greene, but you know, I'm highly flattered to be compared to Graham Greene, of course.
Yeah, and in terms of because when he wrote about Vietnam, when he wrote about the places that he wrote about, whether it was in the Caribbean or in Asia, he actually lived there. In your case, you only traveled there a couple times. Is that correct?
Yeah, I traveled there twice, and I had about 100 books as source material. I also interviewed people who had been students of my grandfather's, people who had been, in some cases, teachers who worked with my grandfather, and people who had lived in the area at the time in order to understand more about that time.
And was there any fiction at all that helped you try to find what you were looking for this book?
There was a lot of fiction that helped me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it's interesting. There is the standard set of English language novels which people are familiar with about Vietnam. So there's The Quiet American.
Mm-hmm.
There's the books by Tim O'Brien. The best-known books are The Things They Carried,
yeah,
and Going After Cacciato. Of course, there's The Lover by Marguerite Duras, which was written in French, translated into English. I mean, one of the things about those books, which always struck me as a young reader, and still strikes me now, is that they're books often from the perspective of a Western combatant in the war. And the truth is that I always understood that there was a huge range of experience that lay outside of the experience of the Western combatant in Vietnam. Now, The Lover is not from the perspective of a Western combatant, it's from the perspective of a young, relatively poor French girl who is living in Vietnam during that time. But again, it's this sort of Western outsider perspective. And, you know, not that those are not valid. I mean, those are valid, interesting perspectives, and those are fantastic books. But in reading them, I always knew that there was something else in between those books, as it were. Now, there is a fantastic book called The Sorrow of War by a man named Bao Ninh, and he was a North Vietnamese foot soldier. Again, it's written by a combatant, and, mm-hmm. And a great deal of it has to do with the experience of being at war. And my book actually is very much about people who are caught in war and who are not actually fighting a war. So, you know, all these things, all these other books are helpful, but of course no other book can ever give you what you need to write your own book. They can help paint the landscape for you so that you can work with that landscape.
I read somewhere a review of the book, and they made mention that the character Percival appears in a short story in Bloodletting and Miraculous Cures.
That is true.
Yeah, and so I guess that's near the end of Percival's life. This book is sort of the middle or the beginning of his life. But there's an in-between story, he said. Will you pursue that?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah, I'm thinking about the next project, and it's not something I can talk about just yet.
Right. Now, the expectations on you after the Giller Prize. You know, we've read about you for years, ever since you won the prize. There was a great deal of wondering when the next book would come out, and so here it is now. Was it a burden on you in the time that you were writing the book?
Yeah, I went through different phases in terms of the expectations. I think that for about a year, I told myself that I didn't feel any pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kidding myself. And then after about a year, I realized, okay, fine, you know, Vincent, stop kidding yourself. You do feel a lot of pressure. And then I felt the pressure, And so now I was going into like year two of working on the book. And what happened is that over years, say two, three, and four, I had all kinds of issues to deal with in terms of research and structure and voice and plot and character. You know, all sorts of things to deal with the book. And they were very, very challenging, you know, and these problems were difficult problems to deal with as a writer. And so I think what happened is I became so engrossed in the project that I kind of eventually forgot about the fact that I was under pressure. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth year of working on the book was a really good year. You know, the fifth year, things came together. The story developed in a very organic way, and it was accessible to me in a very organic and lucid way. And so by the time I was done with that five-year process, the process of writing had been so much more important and so much more both challenging and rewarding for me that, you know, these issues of whatever pressure I may have felt at one point, you know, had receded so far into the background that, you know, they just weren't part of the set of things that I thought about anymore. So, you know, I know that people have expectations, but what I really hope is that people will just read this book and experience it through the words that are on the page, you know, and not feel obliged to experience it through the lens of any kind of expectations. Because one of the magic things about books should be that the book is a world in itself, and that should be an engrossing and sort of imagination-filling experience. You know, the reader doesn't need to think about the whatever expectations whoever has about the writer. I mean, that kind of stuff's not interesting for the book.
Mm-hmm. But at the time you were writing this, you still have a day job, I guess. You're still a doctor, is that right?
Yeah, well, I'm an emergency doctor, so... Yeah, you know, sometimes it's a day job, and emergency medicine is sometimes like an evening job and a night job and a weekend job, and it's an anytime you want job.
Yeah. So you do that part-time, my understanding is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you write the rest of the time, is that right?
Yeah. Well, I'm also a dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's probably the toughest and most important job of all.
Indeed. Indeed, yeah. How do you write? On a computer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I write on a computer, I edit on paper.
And do you write all the time, say, on this book tour? Are you writing?
No.
No.
Not at all. I'm reading.
Yeah. And did you read in your genre? You obviously do, right?
I read widely and voraciously. I love reading. I mean, you know, reading to me is one of these, you know, really superlative human pleasures. It's, you know, it's up there with skiing.
You probably won't get to do very much of that this time of year when you go up to Whistler this week, I guess.
Well, I'm told that Blackcomb is still open.
Ah, there you go, yeah.
Well, the Whistler Mountain is closed and Blackcomb is still open. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so you've written a novel, you've written a collection of short stories, you've written two nonfiction books, so you're even now, I guess, in the number of books you've put out.
I guess so.
Is there one that you prefer? One genre, say?
Yeah, I'm really a fiction writer. You know, and that's where my heart calls me. And when I write a nonfiction book, it's because I think there's some important things that need to be said. And I do have the skill and the craft, and I can do a nonfiction book, and do I think a pretty decent job of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of what calls me as a writer, I'm really a fiction writer.
Yeah, that Douglas book was pretty good.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah. I like the Douglas book myself.
Yeah. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you today, Vincent. I'm enjoying the book.
Great.
And congratulations on it. Good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. A reminder about the events next week here in Vancouver at Insight at the Vancouver Public Library with Lyndon McIntyre. That's Wednesday night the 9th. That's hosted by the Writers' Fest. And then Thursday night the 10th, an appearance with our old friend Rob Wiersma at Bolan Books in Victoria. The website for more, vincentlam.ca. The book is called The Headmaster's Wager. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, Dr. Vincent Lam, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.